this is just an informative session, if I may call it. We're not taking any decisions. We know that this committee is governed by certain rules because it's a joint standing committee. Also to table formally an apology for the co-chairperson. She's not well, so she won't be joining this meeting and the afternoon meeting. Permission has been granted that I can chair alone as long as members do agree. And then we have three formal apologies, and other members have indicated that they will join us as we proceed. So it's myself and member Marshall. From both of us, we are from the NA. So NCOP members, I'm not sure even this afternoon that they will be present, but we'll keep on checking. So let me give this opportunity to the AG's office to then take us through as we prepare for the afternoon, for this afternoon's meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. So I will be just taking you through the audit outcomes for Parliament. What we've also included, Chairperson, and I'll just touch on a few slides, is also on material irregularity. And I know the AG did a presentation specifically to the committee about the definition of material irregularity. And he also indicated we will come and give feedback of what material irregularities has been picked up. So I'll just also just briefly touch on that as I will be going through the presentation. So if everybody has a copy of the presentation, so I'm now on the third slide, basically, the third one that deals with the accountability wheel. Okay. Can members have it? Okay, there. Okay. Yeah, so I will also just talk about that after I've dealt with Parliament's audit outcome. So the third side is just the accountability wheel in terms of what is key important in terms of any type of process that needs to be existing. And I think relating, also linking it back to the material irregularity, I think that is one of the key things that we are driving just from an accountability perspective. So what we basically depicted just in this slide, also in terms of FAMPLA, specifically the roles and responsibility of the accounting officer, which is the Secretary of Parliament, in terms of the whole budgeting process and the planning process, and making sure there's appropriate controls in place, and making sure when there's irregular expenditure detected, fruitless and wasteful or unauthorized, that these things need to be investigated and dealt with. Important from the accountability wheel, basically, it speaks about important that your targets need to be clearly defined and also the monitoring thereof. So after you've set those targets for yourself, what key monitorings are in place to basically monitor what people are doing, what they're doing, and if they don't do what they're doing, are there appropriate consequence management processes in place? And by doing all of this, it will then result in better audit outcomes. If I can maybe take you then through the reflections of the audit outcomes on Parliament, and I'm now on slide 5. So I'm going to read it together with the annual report, so if members want to go to the actual annual report document, so I'll be taking it from page 125 of the annual report. So Parliament basically for the year under review, 18-19 financial year that we are auditing, received an unqualified audit with no findings. When we audit, we basically focus on three areas, which is the financial statements. We're looking, is it fairly stated? Secondly, the compliance to laws and regulations based on specific scope and criteria. And then thirdly, the quality of the performance information. Now, if we link it back to slide 5, basically, if I go to the quality of the financial statements, and I want to refer members to paragraph 2 on page 125, where basically we've indicated in our audit opinion there for the year under review, based on the financial statements that we've audited, that basically the financial statements basically is presents in all material respects. So it's basically an unqualified audit report, which is basically a good reflection. So that is the first part I wanted to highlight to members. The second important thing is in relating to the quality of the performance information. So if we can specifically go to page 127 of the audit annual report, which deals with the quality of the performance information. Now, if you look at specifically paragraph 14 of page 127, there were two programs that we selected for auditing, and that's program 1, strategic leadership and governance, and then program 3 on core business. So the important conclusion that we made basically relating to these two programs that we've audited is basically included on paragraph 16. So we've indicated in that specific paragraph, based on those two programs that we've looked at, we've got no material findings on usefulness of the information, meaning the targets were set in terms of the SMART principles, the information that was produced consistent, and the variance explanations that was given was consistent, and then also that the information that was presented was reliable. Now, if you look at that specific one, the arrow is showing yellow, and the main reason for that, although they've received no findings on PDO, there were some misstatements in the PDO that had to be adjusted in the annual report. Now, if I go to the other one, which is the compliance to laws and regulation, and that's also on page 127, paragraph 20, and there again we indicate that we did not raise any findings relating to material compliance to laws and regulation for the year under review. And that basically comes back to the clean audit outcome that they've received. So they've got no findings on the financial statements, no findings on predetermined objectives, and no findings on compliance to laws and regulations. The other matter that's on the slide relates to irregular expenditure, and I want to refer members basically to note 30 of the financial statements, and that can be found on page 113. And note 30 basically on page 113 indicates the irregular expenditure. I think on that note, what is important to note, there was no irregular expenditure incurred for Parliament for the current year. So they didn't have any irregular expenditure. So the 336 still relates to the closing balance of the prior year that was brought forward. And I think currently they are investigating, so I think it would be good for the committee just to probe to indicate how far this investigation is into this irregular expenditure that basically comes from the prior year. So that is basically on slide 5. If I can just go on slide 6, in there we see for the last 4 years, Parliament basically received unqualified audit reports without any findings from 15-16, so that basically has been sustaining their clean audit outcomes for the last couple of years. The next slide deals with the status of internal control. So specifically when we look at the status of internal control, this will be mainly based also on findings that we've issued in the management report. That is basically a management document relating to specific matters. Now, specifically when it comes from a leadership perspective, what we normally look at overall from a leadership perspective is, first of all, from an ethical environment, is the environment fine? Is there clear policies and procedures in place? From an HR perspective, are vacancies filled? Is there a lot of vacancies in the HR? Do the people have the appropriate skills? What is also important from a IT governance perspective, is there appropriate structures in place? And what we also look at from a leadership perspective is the action plans. Based on the action plans that they have to develop to address the findings, are those action plans addressed appropriately? Now, the main reason basically for under leadership, the 17% yellow, which is basically indicating concerning that one, is mainly because of the repeat findings that we did find that we, when it comes to asset management, but it wasn't material, and then specifically relating to predetermined objectives. So in that case also, those findings relating to reliability of the information wasn't material. However, there was some audit effort that had to be put in to verify the information relating to predetermined objectives. So that was the main reason for the yellow rating. Now, under financial and performance management, and again there we see some yellow, 40% yellow, and mainly again it's related to misstatements specifically on the predetermined objective side and also on findings on misstatements on the asset management and some disclosure items in the financial statements. And that was one of the key reasons for the yellow rating relating to those matters. we look under governance, so that where we refer to, there is the role that the internal audit and the audit committee plays, and from a risk assessment perspective, that we've actually indicated green. The next one relates to the assurance providers, and here basically based on the assurance providers, we would do an evaluation in terms of the audit outcome that is sustained. What impact does the various assurance providers have to sustain these audit outcomes? So if you look at all the assurance providers, we indicated they all provide assurance. So that's basically senior manager, the accounting officer, which is the secretary, the executive authorities, which is the speakers and the chairperson, then the internal audit unit and the audit committee. So there was no major concerns that we've identified relating to them providing assurance. So I'm on slide 9 now. So if I can maybe, so you would notice that specifically when it comes to the financial health that we've looked at Parliament, and again for this year round, we indicate that we are a bit concerned in terms of the certain financial indicator that is concerning. So I want to just refer everybody just to page 82 of the financial statements. On page 82. And you would notice on page 82, so that is basically the financial position statement of Parliament at the end of March. So if you look like right at the bottom, it speaks about non-current liabilities. And you see employee benefit obligation, it comes to 1.6 billion. No? So it's quite a substantial amount, and that basically makes Parliament's financial health indicators not to be favorable. What I also just want to refer members to, if you go to page 106 of this annual report, on page 106, and if I specifically go to note 16.1 of page 106. So of that 1.6 billion liability that has been raised for post-retirement benefits, a big chunk of that, 1.2 billion of that, relates to the PARM Act. So, and that is basically based on members that basically leave Parliament. In terms of the rules of Parliament, they basically contribute 66.7% for medical benefits throughout your lifespan. And hence, that is why that liability is so big in the books of Parliament. So Parliament is basically responsible basically to account for that for all the legislatures and Parliament itself, for all members that have left. And I think this is a conversation most probably from Parliament's side that they will most probably also bring up, because their concern is the funding of this, because currently it would come via the funds for statutory appropriation via Parliament. And that is one of the key reasons, I think, in terms of one of the concerning indicators when it comes to the post-retirement benefit, specifically relating to the medical aid post-retirement benefit, that I thought it would be important to highlight to members. The next slide basically just reflects from a status of record review that we basically come and engage Parliament twice a year, where we normally reflect on what are the key drivers that will have an impact on the audit outcome. So there's specific work based on the action plan that's submitted and any concerns that we've raised, that we basically do a dipstick at a specific time. So we've done it also here before at Parliament, and what we can indicate, when we've highlighted these critical issues that's been highlighted, we normally see that in cases that actions are taken by the Secretary of Parliament to address this. So as a way forward, as the AG's office, we will continue then with the status of record review, in this way trying to mitigate the risk of regressing in terms of the audit outcome. So that's the key thing in terms of the status of record review. So from the audit outcome of Parliament, I think that is basically some of the key highlights. So they've received a clean audit outcome for the year under review. I think the concerning one is just the financial health indicators relating to that big liability that they are carrying for the year under review. So that's that part. Then, Chairperson, if you will allow me very briefly, so I've also added to the deck of slides relating to the material irregularity that the AG has presented at the committee the last time. So I'm not going to repeat in terms of the definition what AG has already shared with the committee, but I thought what would be important just to highlight to the committee is based on the work that has transpired now during the... Okay. So basically, just if we go to slide 12, and this is just on a very high level, based on the new amendments to the Public Audit Act that came into being from the 1st of April 2019, that from the AGSA office, we also look at this definition of material irregularity. So as AGS indicated, there were 16 phase-in audits that we had for the PFMA cycle, where we specifically looked at material irregularities, and this was based on specific criteria. So as you will recall, year-on-year, when we present the audit outcomes, we find increase in irregular expenditure, and it's not going down on a year-to-year basis, and hence then the main reason for the changes in the legislation. So what will then transpire, what is important in terms of this definition, when a material irregularity is discovered, there's specific consequence management that will occur. So first of all, when we've discovered it as an auditee, we will report it to the accounting officer that they will have 20 days to respond. If that response is not adequate, or they don't respond sufficiently, or they promise that they will implement the action and it's not implemented, the next process can step in where they will get another written request in writing to indicate we've got the intention to issue a certificate of debt in your name if you don't take the appropriate action. Based on that, that will be evaluated by the Material Irregularity Committee, and if the action is not appropriate, they will have another chance to represent themselves verbally at this committee. However, it could result in two reasons. Either they would be satisfied based on the response, or it could be the case that they will indicate to the accounting officer, we will issue a certificate of debt in your name and issue that certificate of debt in his or her name. So I think the purpose of this legislation is just to make sure where there is consequence management needs to occur that it does happen. And if it doesn't happen, the person that's responsible to make sure consequence management takes place will then be held accountable. So I think some of the key changes is we are able now as an AG to refer material irregularity for further investigation to any public body. This is in the case, for example, when the accounting officer is involved or where we've got suspected fraud, we might refer it for further. Secondly, it's important taking binding remedial action. Now, in the past, when we used to issue findings as part of our reports, it's management's prerogative to implement those findings. Now, what is key now when we issue material irregularity, those things must be implemented. And if not implemented, there's consequence that will happen. Ultimately, the certificate of debt in the name of the accounting officer will happen. Lastly, it's the issue of the certificate of debt. The Auditor General has the powers to issue a certificate of debt in the name of the accounting officer. So I think the next process that I want to go to is slide 15, basically. I've spoken about the phasing approach. So for slide 15 basically talks about, and I've indicated there were 16 audits where we phased this in during the PFMA cycle. For MFMA, there's 9 audits, but that audit is still underway. So the report that has been finalized by the 15th of October, 12 has been completed. So of the 12 that has been completed, basically, 28 material irregularities has been identified, no? at these audits. So what we're estimating is financial loss of 2.8 billion that should be recovered, either from a supplier or the official, and that should be recovered. So there's a known loss of 2.5 billion and 0.3 billion, basically, estimated unknown loss. So if I can maybe just indicate to the members, which basically is on the next slide. I'll come back to that slide, Kevin, the next one. The examples of the things that led to material irregularities. So one of it is basically, and I'm now on slide 17. So one of it is relates to a delayed payment. So this is in a case basically where a contractor was appointed to do specific work at a specific auditee. However, they couldn't continue with the work because of a dispute that was sorted out between the department and the water board, and they still charged the water board for payments, and that resulted in a financial loss of 12.7 million. The other one, just in terms of an example, is basically where there was medical claims not paid. based on a court judgment, and as a result, this accumulated interest. Because in terms of the court judgment, it had to be paid out, and this resulted then in a 7.9 million material loss. Then also what was found is money that was paid for work done, and the quality of the work wasn't up to standard. And basically this again goes about contract management. There wasn't appropriate contract management in place to make sure before we actually do the payment that the quality of the work is of the right standard. Then the next part of it is talks about, this is in a case where the competitive bidding processes hasn't been appropriately followed, and as a result the incorrect supplier got the tender, and which resulted in them not fulfilling all the requirements as per the Preferential Procurement Act, and they basically went into liquidation. And there was advance payments made to this contractor, which resulted then in that specific prepayment now that has to be paid back because no work has been done, basically. Then on the housing side, there was various overpayments or even duplicate payments. So the work has been done, and they've received more than the work that they've done, or they've already been paid for specific work, and they were paid exactly for the same work. And that results in a 32.9 million loss. So those were just some of the examples of some of the material irregularities that has been identified now. And what we can indicate from our side where this is, when we did find, we've communicated this to the accounting officer. So, Gavin, if you can just go to the slide back, that one, yeah. So in that case, there's about 15, basically, that's currently with the accounting officer. So it's on your slide 15, on your pack, sorry, 16. So it's currently 15 that is currently with the accounting officers, where they've indicated, yes, we will take the steps, we will investigate these matters, and we will report back what has been done about it. Then there were two recommendations where we've put it in the, where the accounting officer didn't respond appropriately to the finding. So in the actual audit report, we've indicated what remedial action must be taken. So in those cases, we need to follow that one up. And there was one that we've referred to as an external body for further investigation. But what I can indicate, when we've communicated in majority of, in all the cases, these findings, we did get responses from the accounting officer. So what will be important now, as part of our follow-up work, we will then make sure that those remedial actions that the accounting officers indicated they will implement, that we will make sure we follow it up from our side that it has been implemented. If it hasn't been appropriately implemented, it can result in the next steps, that ultimately a certificate of debt can be issued in the name of the accounting officer. But I thought it was just important just to update the members in the PFMA cycle, what are those things that transpire to material irregularities. Now, for Parliament specifically, in terms of the phase-in approach, so we are looking, the Auditor General is now establishing which auditees will be phased in for the next year. So I think that announcement will be soon be made. So I think what's important just in general in terms of oversight, so maybe on various committees that you are also sitting, you might have seen in some of the audit reports these material irregularities being reported, and from an oversight perspective it's important that these follow-ups needs to happen to say, what have you done about it, that you take appropriate consequence management in these cases. So I'm ready for any questions, and I've got the team also here to assist.
Right. Thank you very much for the informative presentation. Welcome, members. We felt we should start because this meeting does not necessarily require a quorum. Yeah, it's just for preparing us for this afternoon. Okay. Are there any clarity-seeking questions that members would like to raise? Member Masson?
This opportunity and say thank you. On slide 9, let me also appreciate the presentation by the Auditor General. Very informative. It's just that maybe one will request that next time the font of the documents should be a little bit bigger, as you are working with old people like myself. So the eyesight is no longer like it's supposed to be, but we appreciate the good work. Chairperson, on the slide 9, the Auditor General, they mentioned here that on various overpayments, they mentioned that the recovery processes against the contractor through the Office of the State Attorney and investigations are underway. So what I wanted to check there on that statement is that is it the committee that must do the follow-up to the attorney's office, or is the Auditor General that will be doing that on our behalf to check as to whether those recovery processes have been done? As you said, somewhere, somehow, you have the right to can do the follow-ups on some of the issues. Then, if I get a clarity on that, then I will be happy. If I go to page 11 on slide 22, you then on slide 22, paragraph number 1, under preventing material irregularities. Here, madam, you then said a renewed effort to prevent and detect a non-compliance by those who are implementers. I'm just assuming it's the implementers that must deal with the issue of complying whenever they buy some other things or whatever. They need to follow up certain procedures and rules. So what I wanted to know here is that with regard to the procurement processes of the Parliament, when the Auditor General is dealing with the issue of audit, do you see more of those things happening? But I don't think so, because you told us that they were doing well. I'm just happy that you said they are doing well. They got a clean audit. So what I wanted to say is that maybe we should encourage this good work to happen all the time, because Parliament is the highest body on the land, which need to be respected, which also needs people to look at it as a role model. The legislatures, the local municipalities, when they see us here, definitely sure they must hear what I hear today. I'm so happy that our parliament can be regarded as a clean parliament, which means people that are sitting here in this management committee, they are good people. And I'm happy to be part of this committee, because I was not going to be very happy if things don't go well, because you don't want to hear wrong things all the time. You know, sometimes you don't want to hear good things. So my plea is to say, let's hold hands with the Office of the Auditor General. Let's make sure that the Parliament perform well. Where there are wrong things that are happening, we must just say this is wrong, this must be fixed, without even closing any blanket on it. So those are the things that I wanted to say with regard to this page 11 on slide 22. It's just a comment to say I'm very happy. And Chairperson, I think there is no much definitely sure to query or to worry. The only thing that is there, what I'm happy with, is that the Auditor General is now having powers to can pursue certain things, unlike before. Before, you were not having powers, you were giving instructions to people to do certain things when they were not happening, you didn't know what to do, but now the law has given you the powers to do certain things, so we are very happy to be with you. I think with you we can go far. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to apologize for arriving a little bit late. I'm from another meeting with Mr. Kaiso. Actually, we left another meeting to come here. It's not that we undermine the office of the Auditor General. It's one important institution in the country, and the work you're doing is highly appreciated. It's highly appreciated. But what I wanted to comment about here is the issue of, yes, we've got for 5 consecutive years, we've got clean audit. But what has happened is that what did you assess on the issue of the services which are supposed to be rendered by Parliament? Because you might have a clean audit, but to find that the quality of service which is going down there is not up to scratch. I'll make an example. The turnaround time in the annual report of Parliament, the turnaround time for Parliament to pay the members what is due to them is pathetic. Actually, when we arrive at a point of 2.5 days per round time, it's not like that. It's usually more than 5 days. So I think that the issue of now of the impact of the courses you have, how do you assess them or to advise them otherwise? And then on the issue of these institutions like the Budget Office, the Office of Institutions Supporting Democracy, which are not budgeted directly, which don't get, what advice can you give us? Because I think that if you can look at the way the funding goes there, because it's like it's funded from the reserves, so what happens if they get depleted? Because those offices are serious on us. What advice can you give us as this committee? Thank you, Chair.
I think Mr. Khadebe touched on what I wanted you to go deeper, which is a concern to me as well. Money paid for work done and quality is poor. Can you take us through that specific finding so that we all understand when we raise that with them, we should be able to then have information that backs us up. Member Maso?
Before they answer, Madam Chair, there is a slight thing that I also did not understand, just a little bit for them to clarify, is the issue of 66.7% for permit. I just want to understand what is happening there. What is this 66.7% of permit? What is happening with it? Because it's causing regularities here.
Thank you so much for that question, Chair and members. I think what I maybe just need to clarify, maybe from the start I didn't clarify it appropriately. So the part on the material irregularities that I've spoken about in terms of those examples, those things wasn't discovered at Parliament at all, not at all. So those were part of those 16 audits that was phased in. So this was just for information purposes for the members. To come and give them feedback to say we're facing these 16 audits, this is what we've uncovered. So Parliament wasn't one that we faced into to test material irregularity. There were 16 audits that were phased in, so definitely you can be assured they didn't have any of these findings at Parliament itself. No? So maybe I just needed to clarify that. I wasn't maybe clear when I started the petition. So none of it is applicable basically to Parliament, I think, from this whole slide onwards. Let me just get to... That speaks about the implementation of the material irregularity. Those slides onwards is not applicable to Parliament. So it was more for information purposes for the members. No? So I just wanted to clarify. So I think that also deals with the question of the overpayment. So that specific department where that finding has been discovered, we will make sure that we will follow up. The accounting officer needs to follow up with the state attorney in terms of collecting that money. But it's not applicable for Parliament specifically. Then the other one was relating to the non-compliance side in terms of when it comes to the processes of Parliament in terms of prevention. So I think the key thing that we wanted to highlight in that slide, which is slide 22, in terms of the process, so when anything is discovered as irregular, it should be dealt with immediately and investigated. Now, as I've mentioned, for Parliament, for the current year under review for 18-19, there has been no irregular expenditure identified, which is basically a good indication in terms of them complying with the prescript and the laws and regulation. And you're 100% right, Chair, through you, that they need to set the examples for the others, being the oversight body overall. So there was no irregular expenditure for them that was identified. The other question, just in terms of service delivery, and I think the work that we do from an AGSA perspective, so we don't really zoom in terms of service delivery. So I think what's important to note, when we specifically look at the predetermined objective, we will specifically look at, based on your objectives that you're supposed to achieve, are those key things included as part of your annual plan? So, for example, one of Parliament's key responsibilities, they need to pass legislation. So we will make sure those key things are part of the mandate that's included. So that is what we will look from a relevance perspective. But in terms of what's important in terms of service delivery happening on the ground, that is something that we don't actually look at. I think there is discussions in our office currently, and I think even with the other BRRR committees, this concern was raised when it comes to the service delivery aspect and that impact that it has. So I think from our office, we are going back to the drawing board to see how can we do things differently when it comes to reporting on the predetermined objectives. So we hear the members what they are saying relating to that. The other one relating to the budget office, and I think in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Act, it's very clearly statement of 1996, there should be this budget office in terms of this oversight role that this budget office should be playing. And I think Parliament from their side, so their funding would come by the administrative side of Parliament, this budget office. And on a yearly basis, what normally happens, so Parliament basically don't have to pay any money over. If there's any surplus funding left, they normally retain it. And in terms of the budget process, normally they need to go to National Treasury because they also part of the vote and they would get their funding from National Treasury. So I think from that side, there is concerns, I think, from Parliament side, even in terms of them not getting enough funding and their budgets being continually cut. So I think that is an important debate, I think, for members then to go into in terms, because going back, should the budget office then be a separate vote on its own in order for them to fulfill their roles and responsibility, or currently the role and responsibility that they are performing, is that hampering them doing in terms of their mandate of what they're supposed to do? From that perspective, I know I think it was in this year where we've actually attended a session where other budget officers from other legislatures was also here, so there was some coordination here with this budget office and others. So maybe it's important for research to be done to maybe compare it to other parliaments around the world and see how their budget offices are operating and is it done in a similar way and what would be the most effective way for that office to operate. The last question just deals with the, I think, with the Parliament, with the financial health. So basically, just from where it basically stems from, so from an accounting perspective, so what it's basically saying, so in terms of the policy of Parliament, it basically is saying when any member basically leaves Parliament, we as Parliament will pay 60.7% of your medical aid cost. So that is clear. So in terms of the rules of Parliament, if any member leaves, they pay that portion of the cost. So all the members that have left, that's retired post-1994, now currently that has left, Parliament basically pays for the medical cover. So what this liability is, the long-term liability, so what they then went to go look, you've got X number of members, no? Within Parliament that has left, no? That is still basically alive. So based on that X number of members that's there, what we're basically estimating, this is the total cost for medical aid costs that you will pay into the future. So this is basically what this liability is about. It's basically taking all the members that has left Parliament and they went and predict to say, when we take that lifespan of that member specifically, looking at actuarial values, how long will that member live? So they could decide 80 years, 90 years, and based on that 80, 90 years, if that member is 40 now, we will have to pay for the medical aid until that member passes away. You understand? And they look at specific calculations. Now, this liability of $1.2 billion that's sitting there relates to that, the members that have left that they have to provide for. So our parliament then pays for it. It comes via statutory appropriation. So sometimes they don't even know the full extent for the current year what members will be claiming. So based on that, that's normally paid via the statutory appropriation for those members when they submit those claims. That would come via PARMET for those members that have left Parliament. So the other one with the money paid for work done in quality sport, that is not applicable for Parliament at all. No? So that's related to the other auditees where we've identified those material irregularities. So those examples that I've cited is not applicable to Parliament at all.
And the housing as well.
The housing as well. So all of that is not applicable for Parliament, for information of the other auditees. Okay.
That we all do have interest in is this liability of $1.2 billion. How do you advise that Parliament should go about it?
What would be important, Chairperson, and I think they will be able to respond to that also because there has been talks with National Treasury of how they need to deal with it. And I think one of the things that they are basically pursuing is to say, at least when it comes to other legislatures within the country, they should be carrying their own liability, and Parliament should only be carrying the ones for the national, that is part of Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, and not Western Cape legislature, Free State legislature. So that is currently the conversation I think that they're having with NT. So I think it will be important to ask from them what are the steps that they are taking to basically look at this matter and resolving it currently. Okay.
Whilst we're still on that, the statement by the Minister of Finance has actually advised Parliament to consider cutting on, they were not specific, though they were specific with the executive and executive in the legislatures. What would you advise on, because as we present this MGPM, what is this, budget review, I think we will also be expected, yes, especially as a committee that looks after the finances of Parliament. What would you suggest that we look at as a, what do they call it, cut costing, yeah. Sure.
Thank you for that question. I think across the board, I think everybody's impacted by this cost-cutting across the board. And I think what will be important most probably in terms of the consideration, because I think if you look at Parliament specifically and you go to their position statement, and I think what are the key components driving that position performance statement is the salaries of members, the salaries of staff, then it's travelling. So travelling also makes up quite a big chunk of the money that is being spent for Parliament. So I think in terms of maybe as a way forward to say where's the path that we can maybe look at cutting, maybe that is one of the paths to say, is there any innovative ways that we can try and have our meetings and meet together to discuss specific things. I think when it comes to most probably the compensation of staff working at Parliament itself, is it the case, and I know some of the other people are looking at it to say, are we not going to give increases to the staff as a way forward? The same then would apply to members. But I think as South Africa, we are finding ourselves in quite a difficult position. The other thing that is also quite big for Parliament is basically the transfers to political parties. So that transfer to political parties is based on certain constitutional allowances, terms of the number of members. So maybe there's also another way where Parliament can look and say, can't we reconsider our policy making these transfers to the political parties based on the cost containment that we're currently experiencing.
That's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Singh, you're welcome. Though you came at the end of our meeting, I'm not sure if there's anything that you'd want to raise with the HS office. they're done.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just the last part, you know, it's going to be a very difficult one because I know I'm a chief whip of my party and also treasurer general, and if you're going to touch that area, it's going to be quite difficult, especially that we want more money, actually. We don't think, you know, we don't think Parliament is supporting political parties enough in terms of administration. I spoke at a conference last week at Pan-African Parliament to legal counsel from across Africa, and they wanted to know what challenges we have. And one of the challenges is, you know, our main business in Parliament is lawmaking. We tell everybody in South Africa that we are the highest lawmakers in the land. But what kind of legal support do we have as members of Parliament to be able to input into ensuring that we make proper laws? We don't. We can't afford hiring lawyers. I don't think even the ANC can do that with the amount of money they get. So, you know, there are areas, if you look at other parliaments, Germany and other areas, for each member of Parliament, they've got about 3-4 support. We will have, you know, for 15 members, you'll have 4 support. So that's an area I think we as Parliament and as part of our strategic plan of Parliament as well that we were looking at, and then we had that 2-day workshop. Those are things that we do. How do you empower parliamentarians? And even the constituency allowances that we get from Parliament, which is a problem for yourselves as well, is a concern for us because, you know, with the bigger parties, all right, they get more money, but they have to have more offices. But all parties have to have offices. You look at the PAC, you can't tell the member you must only have one office in one area. He likes to have offices everywhere, but you don't get the kind of allowances from Parliament through to be able to open those offices to make them accessible to the public. So there are challenges there, but administration of those funds is something that's got to be done properly from your side, from the AG side. Thank you, Chair.
All right. We still have a presentation from... Oh, okay, fine. We'll see you this afternoon. Yeah. All right, colleagues from the AG. Yeah. Yeah, okay. We can exchange chairs, Koli and Mbui. The stage is yours. Now, Mr. Singh, in fact, we're just asking for advice, you know, based on what the minister has advised Parliament to do, to look at programs that can try and save money. So they were just suggesting. They're not proposing that we cut. Yeah, so we are brainstorming on cost-cutting measures. So it's a topic that will have to, unfortunately, dominate in this committee. We'll have to really think deep and try identify where can we cut.
Measures that we propose, but I don't know if the NCOP members won't like this. There are no NCOP members here. Only one NCOP members. You know, but I think he might even agree with me. Chairperson, you know, we have meetings, NCOP. In fact, Pungane will know we have joint rules committees. I remember when we had a meeting, some people from a certain province walked in 5 minutes before the meeting finished. I know yesterday there were questions in your house, and our planes were cancelled from KZN. But there were 5 people that were coming from there to here. Now, maybe you come here, you don't even ask a single follow-up question because you've got permanent members to ask follow-up. Now, look at the cost that, you know, in those kinds of things. Then we've got these video conference rooms, V454 and V475. We don't use them. Sometimes you need a mandate. I mean, why can't you get them? You've got your permanent delegates. Why can't you get a mandate from the other delegates if you're not speaking in the debate, in the video conference? So democracy is expensive. So those are some areas where we can cost cut.
I think, good afternoon, honorable members. Mine is short, Chair. And in particular, most of the issues, I think AGF pointed the issues that is on my brief, this brief. I think everyone does have it. Yeah. Starting to page now, one. It's just an overview of which I presuppose my colleague we will deal in details of it, that the Parliament, have, in terms of performance, it has improved steadily over the years. It's in 2015-16, it was performing around 45%. Now, at this 2018-19 that we're considering, it has improved to 78% of its performance. What are the reasons, or what are the what did the Parliament did well in the previous financial year in order to reach this particular good percentage of performance? One of the things that it does, it was improvement in terms of its governance, and as a result, according to what it planned to achieve 14 targets. Out of 14 targets, it managed to achieve 11, of which 3 were not achieved. In particular, these 3 were Program 4 and Program 2. One of it was the one that Honorable Khadebe made an example of, is the average number of reimbursing of to reimburse members. They plan to achieve 2.4 days, but unfortunately they achieved 2.5 days. And also the client satisfaction level, they also not achieve that target of the client satisfaction level. Despite that, there are other remarkable achievements that Parliament has achieved, not only as a Parliament, but as a sector. One of the important things that they've achieved there was to able to have an NDP tracking template which integrates PDG, Provincial Growth Development Plans, PGDS, and IDPs. Also, in addition to that, they are able to endorse, the Speaker's Forum endorsed the sector legislative sector bill, and it was referred to Parliament for formal processes. We recall, honourable members, that is one of the critical things this one, because currently, as employees of Parliament, there's no act that governs us, like in the public sector where you have got the PSA, Public Service Act. Here, there's no specific act that governs. So this legislative sector bill is aiming even to touch to rectify some of those kind of gaps that are currently having in Parliament. And in terms of the financial overview, the Parliament has recorded a deficit for this 2018-19, which this deficit has been ranging even the previous financial year. The previous period, which is 17-18, it also recorded a deficit, and in that year of 16-17, it was a deficit, of course, even that year. But however, there's a coincidence here, because if you look at that deficit and look at the note called cash and cash equivalents, where the cash accumulated over the years for the Parliament, the colleague from AGF alluded, how does that cash, because we don't surrender funds to the National Revenue Fund as per Section 23.1 of the FPME. So we keep that money, any money that we spend, we keep it and we can repatriate it for the next financial year. So as we just see, in terms of our notes, we can see that, notice that this cash and cash equivalent is declining, is reducing over the years, which means that this deficit is being funded by this cash, by these reserves that we are having, this cash cash equivalent with these reserves that we are currently having. And as the Honorable Khadebe asks, it is in this brief that it is dangerous, it is concerning, because there are other critical programs and functions which are funded through the reserves, like your PPO last year and OISD. So if they are depleting, then what is going to happen going forward? In fact, we still notice that in the previous year, Honorable Zee will recall, we made the committee resolve that they must ensure, the Parliament should ensure that these offices are funded through the fiscals. So that's why I raised the question about the committee is supposed to check up on them, because this should ask whether or not management of Parliament have planned to mitigate this potential threat. If yes, what are those plans to ensure the program and function which are currently financed by these cash reserves are getting way into the fiscals? So that's the main thing. Maybe they could, I mean, maybe they have a plan. In fact, because we have not yet considered the budget for 1920, maybe they could have told us that, no, they've agreed with the National Treasury. I don't know as we currently sitting, what is the progress in terms of ensuring that these functional offices are currently funded through the fiscals. One of the things which the AGs already alluded was this accumulated deficit, where the total assets is more in the page 2 now, on page 2, where our total assets are more than, I mean, our total liability, we have got a liability of 1.2 billion, which is through the post-retirement medical aid benefit for the current and former MPs. I think I made a suggestion here that as honorable chairperson asked the AG for this one in the page 2. I made a recommendation that what about, instead of the recommendation, which is even same with what the AG was saying, because I said in this page 2, what about if, how come, I think we should consider we should consider a scenario where the provincial legislators are taking over the function of their members, the liability to their members, and or rather, National Treasury just put this budget under the National Treasury budget vote. These are the options that I suggested here on my brief. And because why I'm saying so, currently there is no law who compels Parliament to have this liability. It's just a practice. That's why I also say that unless the committee should also seek the clarity from the Parliament, management of Parliament. But as far as I understand, there is no law who compels Parliament to carry such kind of a liability. Mm-hmm. It's just a practice that has been happening. So there could be a discussion and we can resolve in a better way that can make our financial position look better than what is currently it is now. Another thing, the other thing, is just a clarifying question again. It's a trade another payable. That is our creditors, people that we have owed at the end of the financial year. I presuppose that those people were only owed in March, because I never see any interest paid where if they were owed in February, for example, in January, that the interest charge on the late payments. So I presuppose that all these 19 million that appears in the financial statement were all the credits that were owed in March. But what is of importance that I highlighted is that there's a 3.1 million, that is 3.2 million in fact, that is owed to the Departments of Justice, DPW and SAPS. So I don't know, what services which were rendered to Parliament by this credit, for these government departments, which are their credit, which we have not paid them. Which means these departments or government departments render some services, of which you didn't pay those services, so they end up being owing them. So that part, there's a 3 million, which is part of the trade creditors that we owe this department for rendering services to us. It's just a clarifying question. What kind of the services that we support to pay this department that we didn't pay? And also, again, it is good that there's no interest paid. I assume, as I said, that I assume that these creditors were only incurred in March, at the last end of the financial year, because as the Parliament is supposed to lead by example, we have got a 30-day policy rule as a country, so we must make sure that we pay all our creditors in time. So I'm glad that, as far as I read in the financial statement, because there's no interest paid, that this Parliament have never incurred, we have paid creditors in time over the last financial year. And another thing, also it was also raised by the AG, is the irregular and fruitless expenditure. I think, as they said, during this year, during 2018-19, there's no new, the Parliament didn't incur irregular or fruitless expenditure. All these balances are the balances which is coming over from the 2017-18. But what is of fact here that I've highlighted is because, look, for example, we've got fruitless expenditure as a result of traffic fines, admin fines, damages, or loss of goods, interest payment, or cancellation fees. And this happened, in the 2017-18. Now it's 19-2. The whole of financial year, these were not cleared. They were not cleared off. It is really a concern, this thing, because it it has to do with the lack of consequence management. And also raises the fact that, I mean, what is difficult to identify a culprit who caused the traffic fines and recover the money? That can take a year without, clearing off this kind of irregular, this kind of unwanted expenditures. I think that is exactly, honestly, thing you recall, is exactly the reason why the AGS and AG powers has been enhanced, because of the failure of the relevant structures, including the parliament, to have a teeth to make sure that these such kind of things, you cannot for example, this thing happened in 2017-18, now it's 1920, you are still in the financial statement sitting this such kind of expenditure without dealing them, without the committee dealing them, or we're supposed to deal with another structure, we're supposed to deal and make sure that we deal with such kind of unwanted expenditures. So I raise the question, what is it difficult to recover money with such kind of, like, for example, as I made for the person who was responsible for the traffic fine? What is this, like, difficult to recover? I mean, that's why I raised whether they've got some proper system to deal with, to treat with this such kind of irregular fraudulent expenditures. Also, I think according to also to Section 56.2D, Roman figure 2 of our Financial Management of Parliament Act, it is required that the Parliament, in note, they must provide information about the disciplinary steps or criminal steps instituted as a result of unauthorized expenditure, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In fact, what does this requirement 6.2.2? It seeks to say that Parliament must report the progress in terms of investigating in terms of those irregular and fruitless expenditure each and every end of the financial year. If there are fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred during the year, or that is still sitting there, but they must keep informing about the progress in terms of dealing with those particular unwanted expenditure. So in our notes, in the notes of the financial statement, their notes, that particular requirement have never been dealt with. There's no note that was showing that, for example, what is the progress in terms of investigating such kind of fruitless and wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure that have never been closed. That took place in 2017-18, for example, as I just said. In trade and other receivables, that is the trade receivable or the debtors. Yeah, there's one thing that is my intention was the in page 98. There's an amount owed by parliamentary members and staff, which is about 2.4 million. It's owed to Parliament. So I don't know, it's just a clarity. I couldn't get why the staff and members owed this 2.5 million in page 98 of the notes of the annual report. And also, from the debtors, we also have an amount of around 12,000, which is owed by departments such as police, sports and recreation for catering. They took catering our kitchen, but they didn't pay the parliament. That is for 12,000. That this is something that happened previously. So what is it difficult to collect this 12,000 from this department, from this government department? The parliament couldn't collect this amount, so it was owed at the end of the financial year as a result of catering provided to this department. Also, is another question, is another clarifying question. By end of the financial year, 2018-19, there were repairs and maintenance with the amount of, with a tune of 6.2 million. Of this amount, there is a 973,000 which was spent for maintenance and repairs of the buildings of Parliament. You will recall, honourable members, that in the previous week we have a meeting with the DPW where they said that the responsibility to repair this building is their responsibility, and of which the budget lies to them. That's why I said that we need just a clarity from them. What they were paying for? What was the arrangement? That is in page 112 of the annual report. Also, one of the things about this cost containment measure. There are a lot of ways, honorable members, as the chair advice from the AG. For example, then, before we go to think of cutting on employees, not because I'm an employee, and others, but there are a lot of leakages here in Parliament. There are a lot of leakages in expenditure. For example, you recall that in 2017, there was the Parliament introduced My Parliament app, the My Parliament app, which was aiming to cut costs on printing and stationery costs. On page there, yes, this page, yeah, the chip, yeah. So,
why did you keep the donation from European
Union? Oh, it's just a guy. Oh, no, I thought I just cleared that now because I'm also thinking of the time. Okay, there's also the donation chair from the European Union. This donation, like what we wanted to find out, this donation is conditioned. It's conditioned in the sense that it is donated for the Parliament to deepen public participation and representation, strengthen capacity in lawmaking and oversight, and building an efficient and effective legislative sector to strengthen the sector capacity to engage and participate in oversee international relations. But what I'm interested to know, because there are a lot of, it's a confusion, because I wanted to get a clarity on the programs, specific programs that have been funded by this particular donation for the Parliament, which are in line with these conditions. That's what I raised it. Not the rugby. I'm not saying it's talking about rugby, I don't know. But it's one of the things, the reason why I raised this issue, you see. So I was on the cost containment measures. I said that there are a lot of leakages here. And I was still talking about My Parliament app that was introduced, I think, in 2017. And it was reported by Parliament that at the end of this year, actually, during March, they almost threw two members in April to use My Parliament app. And this My Parliament will be rolled over to the sixth Parliament, to the new members and the current members. But what's fascinating me is that, as I said, the main purpose of this My Parliament app was to cut costs, this printing, the printing and stationery costs. But looking at the printing and stationery costs, ever since this My Parliament app was introduced, it's still going up. There is no cutting of this printing and stationery costs. Instead, it's going up. Because if you look, in 2015-16, it was 15,000,097. 16-17... It was 15 million and 15.8 million and started to 14 million now. Last year was 15.8 million. At the same time, if you look where, because My Parliament app, you have to pay license fees for that My Parliament app. And then the license fees we pay under the budget line item called computer software, which include other licenses. But if you look at that budget, that spending, they spend additional 3 million for that computer software, which means that we have got a scenario where the printing costs are going up. At the same time, we pay the license fees are also going up. So it means that we don't achieve the objective of cutting this cost. But the whole purpose of this My Parliament app was defeated because the printing costs are still escalating, of which we're still paying the license fees for the My Parliament app. So one of the issues is that why such kind of wastage of cash resources have been let continue for the whole year is the one question that I've just highlighted. And the last one is the issue of the transfers to non-profit institutions. In particular for us is the transfer to political parties. I'm afraid everything is just says a mouthful about this according to their position. But what is happening here? The reason that I raise this is that in the previous financial year, during the third quarter report, the Parliament, they came and told us that the committee that the transfer to Portugal, the spending on the Portugal parties was overspending by 15 million. And therefore, they wanted to give additional funding to the political parties. The committee refused, in fact, it didn't buy the IT, that IT on that time. In particular, I think all of us were there, including Ernestine Hazen. They instead suggested that why can't you take shift demand, demand that was shifting from other programs, you shifted to other critical aspects of the parliament, our program and functions. But now, when I see on their financial report, I mean annual financial report, I see that they've indeed going against that council or such, I mean suggestion by parliament, because they increased the parliament, the transfers to political party by 17 million. So there are issues, there are two issues that I raise with regard to this thing. Number one, when they disclose it on the notes in page 86, for example, they disclose it, the opening balance was 455, of which the opening balance was 436. That's why I put the annexa, the slide, which is annexa. You can see there that the opening, the balance that was approved by Parliament at the beginning of the year was 436, not the 456 that appeared on their note number, under page 86, which is the statement of comparison of budget and actual accounts. So I don't know whether they made a mistake, but the opening balance was 436 instead of 456. The 456 one was the budget after the adjustment of the 17 million that they've given the political parties additional of 17 million. So what I raised here is that, number one, which programs were these funds shifted from? Because they were shifted funds that were, to finance this, that overspending that was taking place under the political party funding transfers. So, the money, which program were these funds shifted from? And also, what reason that led them to give such additional funding and to political parties despite the suggestion made by the committee? So I think these are the issues that I just raised with regard to the financial, to the annual report of Parliament. Other than that, I think I'm done. These are the just few issues which were already been, some of them were already been dealt with by AG.
It is your voice or what, but I fail to understand why do they get clean audit. AG's office is still here.
Yeah.
Are you still here?
Mm-hmm.
Are you with us?
Yes.
I'm saying that I'm not sure whether I'm confused by the content advisor's voice, but it seems like he's raising quite serious issues. I'm not sure how did you come to a conclusion that Parliament could be awarded a clean audit without maybe checking all these things, or maybe they're not serious as they sound. Hence, I said maybe I'm confused by his voice.
Thanks, Chairperson, for that. I think from our side, we are satisfied based on the work that we've done and the evidence that we've gathered that we have come to the correct conclusions relating to Parliament's affairs for the 1819 year. I think what the advisor basically did is was just highlighting some risks for members then to ask Parliament in terms of spending patterns of Parliament and so forth that members can raise with Parliament directly. But I think from our side, I think we are satisfied with the conclusion and the evidence of the work that we've done. What I can indicate, because I think there was something raised about the post-retirement benefit, that there's no legislation required. So I want to clarify that in terms of the GRAP reporting framework, which is the framework that Parliament has adopted to prepare their financial statements, they are obliged to disclose that obligation in terms of the GRAP standard. So they cannot not disclose the obligation. That will result in a qualification for Parliament's audit report if they don't disclose that post-retirement obligation in terms of the GRAP reporting framework, which they prepare their financial statements on. So I think that is most probably just from a risk perspective, the concerns raised, but I think from our side, Chair, we are satisfied with the conclusions that we've made from our side.
All right. I think the content advisor never said they must not disclose, but he said there is no obligation for them to carry that liability. Yeah. Let's just correct that. Okay, thanks, madam. Mr. C?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I think with the, you know, there are two issues here we need to get Parliament to finalize on. One is PAMED. Right. We've been raising this for a number of years, that former members of Parliament and former members of Parliament still benefit from PAMED as continuation members if they were here for so many years. So there's a contribution made by Parliament. But that contribution is not only for members from the NA and the NCOP, but also members who served in the legislatures. And we are saying, why shouldn't the legislatures carry that responsibility? Why should it be this Parliament? Or why shouldn't Treasury top slice an amount for that kind of benefit? So it doesn't come out of Parliament's budget. Right? The second area which we need to look at is flights for former members, right? Which we are looking at in other committees now. But it becomes a cost to this Parliament where if you are a member of the executive, for even for a weekend special, right, you are entitled to 48 business class flights, right, even after you leave Parliament, and your spouse is entitled to flights. Now, we are looking at this because we feel it is firstly unfair that we as former members, if you and I have to leave Parliament tomorrow, we'll get four economy class tickets a year. Four, just four.
And only for yourself.
Yeah, for yourself. And they get 48 business class. Right? Now, and that cost is carried by Parliament's budget, not by the budget of that department where they came from. So we are looking at this holistically in other committees of how can we now have some kind of fairness. And we receive presentation which would say that if we reduce the number of tickets to the executive and increase hours, right, depending on the number of years that you served, if you serve so many years, then you get a certain class ticket. And then there's a capping on it. Not for not more than 10 years you should be getting these flights. Then Parliament can save money. Now, if that is the thing, then we must come, that's a cost-saving measure. Right? So PAMED and that we've got to, and then the other issue is insourcing and outsourcing of staff. We need them to tell us, you know, like your catering staff and all that, where we're sort of outsourced. There were companies, contracting companies, now we've insourced them after last year's, was it last year or the year before where there was the unions and all that. Now, are we benefiting, are we losing? Not that we want outsourcing, we want insourcing, but to what extent is that insourcing helping us? So these are some of the issues we can ask them. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members. My presentation, I think I will just talk about few issues because they are they are related issues, which means I will be repeating what the content advisor was saying. So the outline of the presentation, I started with the performance information, and then I'm reading on slide 2 of my presentation. Started with the performance information, and then the program analysis, and the financial performance, as well as the issues for consideration by the committee. Then it's where I summarized all the issues that the committee should look at. I made them in point form, in bullet points, so that it can be easy to read them through at the end of the presentation. From slide 2, we go to slide 6. Slide 6. On slide 6, it's where we talk about the program 1, the strategic leadership and governance. In that program, it consists of some number of offices. is the office of the executive authority, which means the speaker and the chairperson of the NSOP, the PBO, the OISD, and the treasury advice. But when you look at the performance indicators that were set there, they are not explicit. It's only the PBO that has a clear performance indicator. Although other offices, there was budget attached to them. Especially with the executive authority, there is no performance indicator there. The OISD office, there is no performance indicator, although there was budget attached to them. So we only those issues that I highlighted on program one, and then we go to even program two is the administration, but we didn't raise any more issues, but it consisted about six programs that were implemented, of which they achieved 100% of them. Okay, let's go to another slide. I'm just trying to select the slide. See, we go to another important issue on program three. It's slide nine. Program 3 is the core business, is the most important program in Parliament, is what Parliament is about. So it consisted about three performance indicators, of which the service charter was achieved, the performance indicator service charter, which includes the committees, research unit, and the their houses, both houses, NSOP and NA, they have achieved the, and then we go even legal services. And then there were two annual indicators that were set there. For example, an annual indicator where they will measure the population that have access to Parliament, to participate in the parliamentary processes. That was the annual target. If you look at the quarterly reports now, they were not reporting on those targets. They called them annual targets. Every quarter, they were not reporting in the previous year, even this in this current year. They are not reporting on those performance indicators. They say they are annual targets. They only reported at the end of the financial year, of which they supposed to set a milestone. For example, if you say you assess the access of population to participate in Parliament, you can say in the first quarter how far or how the progress in the first quarter and the progress in the second quarter right through, but we feel that they are not accounting for those performance indicators. They just call them annual indicators. The problem there is that the members will only notice at the end of the financial year. For example, the members that were here in the previous parliament, they would not see if that those performance indicators, they are, what is the status of performance, because they were not reporting. Now it's reported after they left. Mr. Singh was here, but you never heard them reporting in the quarterly reports about those performance indicators. It's only now that they are reporting, which means they should fix the way that they report to committees, especially on those quarterly reports. So we go to the next program also. I'm just selecting them because we pass all the programs because some of them, they are not important issues. So when already Mr. Mkajis has already talked about them. And then we go to the next section of the analysis, is the financial performance. It's where now I will be talking about the snapshot to the income statement and the snapshot to the balance sheet, as well as the issues to be considered by the committee on financial performance of Parliament. And then slide 13, I was just agreeing with the Auditor General that he has assessed the financial statement of Parliament. So then we go to slide 15. It's where it talks about the snapshot table to the income statement. If you look at the first row there, it says total own revenue of Parliament. Parliament also is generating revenue in terms of interest that it receives from the bank when it deposits money, and also the catering. Those are own revenue that Parliament generates. If you look now on 2013, we try to compare 3 years, or the period from 2013-14 till 2018-19, which means 2013-14, it was before the fifth Parliament. If you look there on their own revenue, they generated about 53 million rands. But it decreased gradually till now in the current year that we are reviewing. It, now they are generating up to 30 million from 53 million, which means their own revenue is decreasing. Over that period of the fifth Parliament till today, it was decreasing. From 53 million up to date, it's 30 million. So also the next one is the annual appropriation that they receive from fiscus. So I didn't raise issues there, but what I can say is that it increased by 160 million from 2017-18 till today. The budget was increased by 160 million. Then there's a statutory appropriation. If you look at the statutory appropriation, in 2013-14 up to 2017-18, then that statutory appropriation was increased by 1.7 million, which means there was no tangible increase there. It was increased slightly. And then, but now between the 2017-18, you can see that it was increased by 13 million. Why now it was about from 1.7 million in 5 year period. Now from the 2017-18 till the current year is about 13 million. But I'm sure there should be a reason that they can explain why it was so. And then there's another one, the total income. It just shows the total income. I cannot say anything there. But what I can say, Parliament has got about 2.5 billion budget that it received in the current year. And then if you look now at the expenditure, total expenditure according to the financial statement, Parliament, the total expenditure is more than the budget that they received. That's why they incurred deficit at the end. For example, in the current year, in the year that we are reviewing, they had a deficit of 230 million according to their financial statement. And that deficit, it has been in accumulating over 6 years, because we started our review according to our analysis from 2013-14 before the fifth Parliament, and then check how this deficit was accumulating. So it accumulated from 2013-14, it was 183 million. But up to date, if you go now to the next slide, slide 16, it's where it says the snapshot table to the balance sheet, it, which means now it's going to show the accumulated deficit since 2013 till today. Now, the accumulated deficit up to date is 1.5 billion. To round it off, it's about 1.5 billion in all those years, about 6 years till the current year that we're reviewing. So, which means Parliament is in a bad state now. One could say, when read the annual report and the financial statement of Parliament, especially looking at the financial position of Parliament on the balance sheet, one could say, no, Parliament is the bad business, if it was a business. We know that it's not expected to make profit, it's just non-profit organization. But when I analyze it, I try to use the method like of the private sector. Also, like SAA, SAA Parliament is in the, according to their financial statement, is in the same state with SAA. But I think the Auditor General doesn't make it worse because it gets money from the fiscals. SAA is supposed to make profit, but Parliament receives money from the fiscals. But even they would say, they would raise the going concern issues, but they don't because they know that Parliament is going to be budgeted. But it's because of this deficit. If they can address this point of deficit, then books of Parliament, it can be correct when it comes to deficit.
Sir, you mean the Parliament needs a bailout?
Yeah, Parliament needs a bailout. In fact, Parliament doesn't need a bailout. In fact, Parliament, I think, it delegated its powers to the National Treasurer, because the National Treasurer that decides and cuts the budget of Parliament, of which Parliament has got all the powers to appropriate budget, to do whatever about budget for the National Treasurer. Also, the National Treasurer doesn't have powers to approve budget. But Parliament delegated these powers to the National Treasurer. And then it's the National Treasurer that decides about the budget of Parliament. Parliament should decide on its own how to address this deficit. They have those powers, but they are not utilizing. They are handing over to the National Treasurer. But I think I would suggest that another easy way that the committee can push this so that Parliament can get more money to fund its mandate. We must understand that now Parliament has got this constitutional mandate. It's underfunded because you will realize that during the year, when you apply for oversight visits, sometimes they are turned down, some they are not approved because there is insufficient money. Because if Parliament can request more money to fund its own mandate, then things they can go well. We mustn't take it light because it's not profit, but it's just funding the mandate. It's also important like profit because the responsibility that it has to go and hold these entities accountable like SAA and others so that they can make profit. But if it doesn't have sufficient money to conduct its own oversight, how can you push them to make profit? You cannot. Because I know that some of the oversight visits were turned down because there is insufficient money. But even if it's approved, they will cut the number of delegates. Not all members will go to the oversight because there's no money, even the statutors and all that, so to capacitate the members in order to hold the executive accountable. I think all this is caused by delegating its powers to the National Treasurer, because it has powers to amend and to change the budget. That's why it has the PBO, the Budget Office, to help it to amend budget. But it's not utilizing that power. It's delegated to the National Treasurer. I think now I would suggest that the committee can, in its recommendation, in both reports, this report to the House, the report of the committee to the House on annual report, and the report of the committee to the House on the strategic plan of Parliament, they should put a strong recommendation to say Parliament needs more money to fund its own constitutional mandate. Then it should be stated strongly to say it needs more money. So otherwise, we won't solve this problem of deficit. It's going to accumulate. In fact, in other words, when Parliament receives money, it's supposed to, I'm sure it's reducing its budget by the deficit of the previous year. That's why it ends up having no sufficient funds to fund its own mandate. For example, last week we met with the Public Works. It's supposed to improve the conditions of the parliamentary villages. The Secretary to Parliament can simply say next year, no, we didn't do it because we don't have money. What members will say? You can't even push her to say why or to hold her accountable for that. If she says there was no money, you cannot, because there was no money. But I think the committee also should find ways to support Parliament administration also to get more money in order to find its own constitutional mandate. That's what we wanted to say today. Other than that, the auditors have already spoken about the audit. So we don't. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Let me appreciate the presentation. I want to start with the first presentation where they spoke about that the slide came point 2.6, where he was talking about the repairs and the maintenance. Just clarity there. In that expenditure, is it about the work that has been completed, or maybe it includes that still continuing? And then on 2.8, where you talked about the cost of renting still going high, I want to believe that I don't see any possibility of reducing that expenditure, because we are still duplicating the work. We are given the benefits, the laptops and the iPad and so on. Still, the material is printed for us. You can go to the committees. You'll find that maybe out of 10 or out of 15, one person is using the laptop, you know, to check the material. Because remember, the material has been even emailed to us. We don't use them. That is why you find that some of the members, maybe they are even left it at home there, used by the kids there, because they can't. You know, when you said they have been trained, but what if my memory is honest with me? I believe that they were only shown the PIN number, you know, how to open it. This is your PIN. This is how to open it. But remember, we are so many here with different ages, you know. Others, we might be BBTs, you know. So if you just give me a PIN number and say that the laptop is there, that's how you open your laptop, you can't expect me to be able to open it. The question is how to operate it. So that's another challenge that I think we are still faced with in order if we want to accomplish that mission of reducing the cost. But I think it's very important. We need to go that route whereby you can't give us a trade of tools and not being used. You know, it is tantamount to unfuttile expenditure. You see, we need to use them here. We need to know how to use them. Then I'm just tempted to comment to say on the last presentation to say that, you know, we are so busy as a parliament, you know, dealing very harshly with the SOEs, you know, not being able to use the money and so on. So your presentation is shocking to say, are we in the same state? Maybe they'll be happy and say, ha, you must don't talk too much anymore because yourselves, your coffers are going down too, you see. I wonder now, I seem to concur with my chair when she was asking the Office of the Auditor General to say, hey, your presentation, you know, was so excellent, convincing, but now we start questioning when we get this clarity, you see. But I'm just commenting on that to say that really it raised some alarm. It gives a question mark at the end to say, is a true reflection of what the Office of the Auditor General is saying. But I understand they already explained to say that Bona is outsiders. They only check, they want to see the receipts here and the what. That's what tells them, oh no, this is an income, this is an expenditure. They just balance and then that's why they can't. But yourselves as researchers, when you go deeper into, you see that some of these challenges. But I want to appreciate that eye-opening for us. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.